This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired trainer Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four. You know him as Pope Jude as well. And we are happy to have you with us and everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 206, and, of course, all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer or your mobile device at horseracingradio.net. JT, what's up?
Everything's cool. I'm very excited about this show because it's a trainer that I don't know. I love when that happens.
A lot of times on this program, we'll visit, over the years, as people know, we've visited with guys like Shug McGahee and D-Wayne Lucas and Bill Mott and Todd Pletcher, and names that here in the United States, anyways, are more household names on the trainer side of things. Some of our favorite shows are the ones that we get to visit with people that aren't as well known, at least at this point in their careers, and that's what we have here tonight.
Yeah, it's great, and you know, I've been in this business for a long, long time, longer than I like to admit. And I've met a lot of people along the way. But when there's somebody that I've never met that's coming on the show, I get excited because I want to put that voice and face to the name in the program.
Well, all you have to do is go look at the Woodbine trainer standings, and you're going to see Mark Cassie at the top of the list. But then right below Mark in the second position now, you're going to see a trainer by the name of Norm McKnight. And the 60-year-old native of London, Ontario, has trained 390 winners to date. And he is in the midst of his greatest season, currently with 41 winners, which surpasses his previous high of 34 winners, which came in 2014. And Norm is kind enough to be with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Norm, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing well, my friend, and happy to have you on board. And, you know, after this show is completed, you're going to be a household name here in the United States. You know that, right?
I'll take your word for it.
Well, you know, you think about where you are right now in the standings, and you've become a perennial top 10 trainer at Woodbine over the past several years, but you think about sitting there behind Mark Cassie, who's a multiple Sovereign Award winner and now a Canadian Hall of Famer. That has to be pretty special for you.
Well, yes, Mike. I mean, it's really gratifying. You know, we're just blessed by the success that we're having, and you know, just enjoying our role, as they would say. You know.
Yeah, when you get on those roles, you really have to embrace them because everybody knows racing's on the high and low end all the time.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, it's a struggle every day, but we do the best we can. We try to surround ourselves with good people and good staff and hope for the best at the end of the day.
All right, let's just cut to the chase, Norm. As we're sitting here recording this program here on Wednesday, you are 18 wins behind Mark Cassie. Can you catch him?
I think that's an impossibility, you know, just on sheer numbers. Mark has probably 100-plus horses in training here. We're sitting here probably with about 25, so you know, just on sheer numbers, I think that's just an impossibility. He has new horses coming in all the time. So, you know, from races won, no. Percentages-wise, I think, you know, when you look at the percentage, we have a good win percentage, but that maybe we'll be able to top Cassie is in the win percentage category, perhaps. But you know, he's always gonna win more races here at Woodbine than any trainer just on the sheer numbers that he carries.
What a tremendous feat to be second in the standings at a long meet like Woodbine with only 25 horses. How'd you pull that off?
Well, you know, we've been very fortunate over the years, you know, especially in the past 5-6 years, been able to situate myself. I've been trying to work towards the same clientele, and just getting to know them and them getting to know, you know, getting to know me a little better and how I like to operate, and getting their confidence in having confidence in me to work with me and allow me to do my thing. You know, unfortunately, I fought in this third bed business. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but I come from the standard beds primarily. Like my upbringing was in the standard bed business. But I found since I've been here with in the third bed industry side of it, you know, the unfortunate thing that I find, and I think that it has a lot to do with the success and failure of certain trainers and how they do year to year. It's basically who actually trains them and you train them. But I find that the clients here, the owners want to dictate who rides, what races we run in, you know, what distances, what surfaces, et cetera, et cetera. So I think just over the last 5-6 years, I've been able to have, you know, just put myself in a situation where I've had the same clients for a number of years now. And I think they've just become confident with me and letting me do what I need to do. Like, so I guess it's said they give me enough to hang myself, you know.
Well, you know, Norm, it's funny because so many of the great trainers who have appeared on this program over the past several years have often referenced the owners that they have involved with their operation and the relationships that they've established with those owners. And it sounds like you're kind of in that same mentality anyways, that, hey, you can't do it without good owners and without good relationships.
Well, you know, it's you need relationships, you need good clients, you need good people, you need people that will work with you. You know, it's always frustrating as a trainer when you're forced to be hired to do a job and then be told how to do it. You know what I mean? So this is what I've tried to relate to my clients, is this is who I am. This is how I like to operate. And, you know, if you work with me, I think, we can have some success. And at the end of the day, if you're not happy with things, you can always just, get rid of me, fire me, you know? Move on to the next guy.
Jude, it sounds like he's preaching to the choir, right? With you sitting over here to my left, it sounds like I've heard you say that on many occasions.
Yeah, well, you know, the relationships, most trainers always say the same thing. The horses are easy. It's the clients that are hard. And, you know, but I always encourage people to interview several trainers and try to find somebody with goals and aspirations. Do you think that's important?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's good for the clients, the owners, to experience different people and get to know their personalities and how they run their businesses. You know, I've just been fortunate this year to be in a place where everybody is kind of let me call the shots. Like, you know, everybody seems happy, so we just keep going along. I run mostly a claiming barn, although that's, you know, not what I'd like to have, but we run mostly a claiming horse stable. We do have allowance horses and the odd 2-year-old, but you know, the whole trick is, I mean, to me, it's, you know, you try to be as aggressive with them as you can. You try to put them where they can win. I recently had said to the racing secretary here, you know, he said, one thing about you, you like to run your horses, and you always seem to put them in the right spots. I said, well, you know, I like winning. I'd rather, you know, I just hate being the first loser. I'd rather win, you know. So that's, you know, winning's obviously more important to me than being second. So,
what things did you learn in the standard bred business that you've carried over to the thoroughbred business?
Well, you know, it took a lot of time for me to get comfortable with the thoroughbred. You know, not really a lot. I mean, horses are horses, and horsemanship is horsemanship. So, you know, the training I've learned to maybe change the training around. I have to tell you, when I first came here to a third, they probably tried more standard breaths, training them farther, doing this thing, got more type thing, but it didn't work out for me. So I found that I had to modify and make changes if I was going to, you know, be successful on this side of the game, the third breath, as opposed to the standard bed. So, you know, it took years for me to just feel my way along and try and handle through and try and, you know, come to pass with everything that made sense to me. But at the end of the day, horses are horses. Whether they're standard beds or thoroughbreds, they're all horses, and it's really just learning what makes the individual tick.
You know, Norm, we've had several trainers that have come on, and they've come from different backgrounds. Some have been sons of trainers who didn't know anything else. They were raised around the racetrack, and that's all they did. We've had others that have come from the world of steeplechase racing and been successful in thoroughbred racing. And then yourself coming from standardbreds. Now, that's a bit of a rare path. You don't see many people coming from the standardbred game, getting into thoroughbreds and having the kind of success that you have. Talk about those two worlds and how much different the standardbred world really is from the thoroughbred world.
Well, you know, I don't know that there's a huge difference. I just think, the clients are different. Everybody's, their outlook on the way the industry is different. One thing I've learned from here being with the thoroughbred is, you know, people live in the past, I think. You know, whatever has been historical, whatever was the way it was 20 years ago, it's supposed to be the way it is today. Nobody likes change on this side. But, I think you have to evolve with the times, whether it's standard or thoroughbreds. The client mentality, I find to be a little bit different. But, going back to the same thing, horses are horses. I mean, if you can figure one breed out, you should be able to figure the next breed out. I've been fortunate enough to be born around the horses. Like, my father had show horses, so I originally started my young years in the show horse world. And then when I was about 12 years old, I think my father got his first standard bed. And then, you know, the whole standardbred career took off from the show horse business. I was showing horses at 8, 9 years old at the different state fairs, Michigan State Fair, the Royal Winter Fair, the Canadian National Exhibition, et cetera, all the small fair that we had here in Ontario. So, you know, I've always been around horses all my life. And then my father got involved with his first standardbred when I was 12. And then by the time I was 16, I'd taken out my first provisional driver's license and started racing standardbred.
And Norm, you mentioned the harness horses and the success that you had there. Well, you look back on your career as a driver, 1,500 races as a driver, you earned over $10 million in purses. Those are lofty numbers, my friend. You did quite well.
Yes. I mean, back then too, Mike, it was a big thing if you could win $1 million in purse money the way the purses were back then. And now it's, I look at the same circuit here at Woodbine and the standardbred guys, like they got $1 million, $2 million made in February, you know what I mean? The first couple months of racing. So, you know, that's how different it's, the purse structure has changed. And like I said, back then, if we won $1 million, it was like, wow, we accomplished something, you know? So, and now it's just, they do that in the first month or two of racing.
Yeah, you had a day in 1991 that I know you're never going to forget at Mohawk Downs, and that kind of brought everything to a halt and an abrupt halt for you on the standardbred side of things. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, that's, it was an unfortunate thing. I think it was in 1991 at Mohawk. I was at home. Got a phone call about 2-3 in the morning, and they said that there was a barn fire, and I was currently training like 17 standardbreds and doing a lot of catch driving for other clients, for other trainers. And then we pretty much lost everything. And unfortunately, at that time, the clients that I had, they were kind of had a bitter taste in their mouth over the loss of all their livestock in the fire. And a lot of them weren't sure they wanted to get back into the business, or some of them kind of said, well, give me some time and let me think about it and what have you. So I just was kind of left without a business. I just kept on, fortunately for myself, I could actually race the horses and do the driving. So I was I just continued catch driving, and I wound up here at the Thoroughbreds kind of by a bizarre situation. It just kind of happened, and here I am.
Nothing rips your heart out more than a barn fire. I went through that in 1978 at Ellis Park, and it was just devastating. And you know, it's understandable how people are standoffish about getting back in the game. I mean, it takes a while to recover from that and to get through the heartbreak of losing your horses. I think a lot of times people, you know, consider horse racing more of a business than a sport, but people that are in the game, they love their horses, and it's really, really hard to continue on after something like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't think there's any one person in the horse business or horse racing game that, whether it be standard bred or thoroughbred or whatever capacity it may be, but if you're involved, I mean, you're involved because you love the animals, and that's why you're here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Visiting with trainer Norm McKnight here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Norm currently second in the standings behind Mark Cassie at Woodbine and having the best year of his career. Norm, what's been the success to that success that you're having here in 2016? What's been the key?
Well, I think a couple of things. One which we've already touched on, I think I've just been very blessed with the clients that I have that are kind of allowing me to, you know, run the ship, sort of say, and place my horses where I think they have the best opportunities of winning. You know, I've been fortunate that they've supported me in all my decisions so far this year, so that makes a trainer's job a lot easier. I believe that we've also been blessed, you know, with very few injuries this year, so we've been able to keep our, you know, our 25 to 30 horses. I mean, we fluctuated in numbers this year between 20, 25 and 30 at the most at one time, down to 25 or 27 now. But, you know, I think we've been blessed with being able to avoid a lot of injuries. You know, I talked to a lot of trainers here, and, you know, it seems to be a nightmare this year. A lot of people are just, they can't believe the number of injuries they're having. And a lot of them apparently seem like, you know, soft tissue injuries.
Well, it's, you know, sometimes you get on a roll and you can't, you just can't stop it. And that's one of the best trainings of, best feelings a trainer can have.
Well, you don't ever want to stop a good roll. I mean, it's really hard. You know, as you know, and being in the game, I mean, losing is a lot easier than winning. You know, so when you can put together a little run like we've had this year, I mean, it's certainly gratifying. And you know, you just have to pinch yourself and say, well, how long can this last? But I think perhaps it's a little easier for, you know, a claiming horse trainer, you know, which we primarily have in our barn at this time, just because we can be a little more aggressive with where we place our horses, where when, you know, clients, if you have a lot of 2-year-olds or 3-year-olds, and clients have gone out and given $1 million or $500,000 or $200,000 or $100,000, whatever the case may be, you know, they're not that eager to come to terms with hearing you say, well, you know, I think he needs to go in, you know, maybe 20 to win, you know what I mean? He needs to run for a maiden 20 to break his maiden. You know, sometimes it takes time and a number of starts before they can come to terms with that. Where you, at the end of the day, I think when you have claiming horses, you claim one for 20. You know, if you get lucky, the horse can go on, maybe win 25 or 32 up the ladder, have a little bit of fun, win a few races. you know, on the downside, you know, if you've made a bad claim for whatever reason, he doesn't have the talent you thought he did, or maybe he has some physical ailments, you can address that with the client and say, you know, hey, I don't think this is a long-term horse for us. We should look to cash in. And, you know, if we drop to 12 or 10, we can win, grab the purse. Even if someone takes him for the 10 or 12, we're even or up a few dollars, which is better than losing, and we can move on to the next one. We can keep the cash flow going, and I think you need to have that. You need to have cash flow in this game.
Yeah, how important is it to keep your clients in business?
Well, without clients, we're not going to be in business, the majority of us. You know, I know I don't have enough money to just be independently, you know, buy my own horses and have my own 10 or 12 horses standing here between $20,000 and $100,000. I mean, that's not going to happen. So I think the majority of trainers that are in the business, especially here at Woodbine, I think we depend on our clients. And, you know, and the only way for me, you know, but actually keeping them is to keep them happy. They have to make money and get into the winner's circle. And that's what I try to do.
Well, let me tell you something, Norm. We had the privilege earlier this year to make our first trip to Woodbine and broadcast the Queen's Plate here on the network. And Woodbine rolled out the red carpet, and we were so impressed with everybody at the racetrack, the commitment to racing, and all the horsemen. The barn area was really, really nice. Everything just seemed to be, well, perfect at Woodbine. And you mentioned the horsemen up there and clients and trying to get more clients. Is racing in general doing enough, or what kind of things could they do differently to attract new clients to the game?
Well, I mean, I don't know, that's kind of a odd question. You know, I think Woodbine does a excellent job at marketing the business. I think they're really putting, you know, one foot ahead of the other one here, as far as trying to promote racing in a positive way. It's definitely a fantastic facility. You know, I've had, you know, the opportunity to be at a few different racetracks, you know, Gulfstream and Keeneland and Churchill and some of those places, and a lot of the little smaller racetracks in the United States. But, you know, personally, I think Woodbine's just a fantastic facility, and it offers a great opportunity for trainers and horse owners.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I guess where I was going with that question too is more along the lines of what things could racing do? What other things are out there, in your opinion, that we could do to attract new owners to the game and to maintain the owners that we have now?
Well, I don't know. You know, I just don't know the answer to that question. You know, I've tried to wrap my head around that for the last 10 years. How do you keep trying to find new clients? How do you keep trying to generate interest in the sport? I just think there's so many things to compete with in today's market. As far as from an entertainment value, that it's really hard. And, you know, the unfortunate thing that I see, that, you know, having a few years, you know, of age on myself, you know, I just see that a lot of the older clients that have been in the business, the older money, if you'll say, generations of the past are getting older. Their children don't seem to have the same interest in the horses that their parents may have had. So I don't know. I just don't see the interest in the younger generation. I hope that changes, but I just don't see it. And I don't know what you would do to change it other than what they've been doing. I think they've been doing a fantastic job by trying to promote the venues. Or, you know, when you have big days of racing on, you know, they try to have concerts and bands and, you know, whatever. Just they try to spice it up and make it a very enjoyable place for, you know, a family or young people to come and spend the afternoon or the evening. But I just don't know what the answer is, to be honest with you.
I think that's one of the pluses of Woodbine, the young and energetic staff that they have, and they're coming up with some new ideas. Also, the Wegg's Sports Bar, where people may come in to watch a football game or watch baseball or some other sport, and they're exposed to horse racing there as well. And you know, I think that's a really cool place that Woodbine has embraced. So you know, it looks like the sport in Canada is doing quite well compared to a lot of racetracks in the United States, and I think that's a feather in Woodbine's cap.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I think they're doing all the right things, you know, from marketing, from a marketing standpoint. I don't know what else they can do. I'm sure, you know, they have a lot of intelligent people on their staff, and they'll figure it out. You know, that's probably just not a strong point of mine. You know, I've just been a horse trainer all my life, so I'll leave that to the people that are a lot smarter than I am.
Talking with trainer Norm McKnight here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. JT, you think about some of the moments that Norm has had in his career. We haven't even really touched on those yet. We're going to do it in the second half of the program. But you think back to that moment in 91 when he had the barn fire they talked about earlier, and he lost all of his standardbreds. That is what led him to get involved in the thoroughbred business. And when we come back in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about how Norm got involved in thoroughbreds. We'll go back to the beginning, and we'll walk all the way through the past several years and the success that he has had and the success he's having this year. Some great stories forthcoming. It's the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay with us.
The Fasig Tipton November Sale. The world's premier breeding stock event annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. In 2015, broodmares averaged 3 times more than the nearest competitor, and racing and broodmare prospects averaged 5 times more, with weanlings selling for as high as $600,000. The Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 7th in Lexington, Kentucky. Nominate today at FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosa Maya, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Maryland Breds are your formula for success. Be part of a breeding program in a state which offers competitive purses, 30% breeder bonuses, 30% owner bonuses, and year-round racing backed by state legislators creating pro breeding and racing legislation, all supported by a working cooperative between the racetracks, horsemen, and breeders. It's time to own a Maryland Bred. Better stallions, better mares. Maryland Breds. Learn more at MarylandThoroughbred.com.
Hey everyone, Mike Penna here to let you know that great purses, world-class amenities, and an extended racing season are just a few of the reasons why you should race your horse at Woodbine. Woodbine Racetrack offers a premier experience to all friends of the horse racing community and is committed to innovation, playing host to over 130 live racing days in 2016 and 2017, with an average of over $500,000 offered in purses daily. That's right, the meet starts in the spring and concludes in December. You'll get access to world-class trainers, a modern backstretch, great training surfaces, and so much more. So why not share in the profit by racing at Woodbine? To start your racing journey, visit woodbineentertainment.com/due north.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Don't forget, if you did miss any portion of this show here tonight, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows, all there for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Well, we spent the first half hour of the program. I'm going to spend the next 30 minutes or so visiting with trainer Norm McKnight, who is currently second in the standings at Woodbine and having a career year with already 41 winners. And we're only sitting here in the beginning of October, so many more yet to come for Norm. And Norm, we talked in the first half of the program about that tragic day in 1991 at Mohawk Downs when you were training thoroughbreds, you had the barn fire, you lost all your horses, but you said at that moment it was kind of a bizarre way to lead you into the thoroughbred business. So take us back to that moment and how you got involved with the thoroughbred racing side of things.
That's kind of a story in itself. After the barn fire, I was just kind of, like I said, just kind of focusing on the catch driving part of it. And then one of my standard bred clients, he actually went out on a date with a girl and it turned out to be a thoroughbred trainer. So they didn't really hit it off when they went out on their date, but he said, "Oh, I have to introduce you to my standard bred trainer." And he said, "I'll get you two guys together and just introduce you." So anyhow, he introduced me one afternoon or one evening at the races. He brought her out, introduced me, and then we picked up a little bit of a relationship. You know, she'd come over to visit me once in a while, and you know, she bought a horse herself. She was working for a trainer by the name of Roddy Wright at the time, and she bought a horse herself, and she wasn't having much luck with it. And so she would come over, and you know, she would, you know, "I don't know what to do." And well, I said, "Well, I'm not too busy right now." So I said, you know, "Just had the barn fire, you know, we race in the evening, so my days are kind of free right now." So I said, "Why don't, if you want," I said, "I'll come out in the mornings and just kind of hang out with you. And, you know, maybe I can give you some positive input and help you out with the horses." So she said, "Oh, that'd be great." So, you know, I came and I started hanging out in the early mornings at Woodbine. And we started working with her horse. And I think the first time that, well, the first time she started, it finished up the track. It was beat 20 lengths or something. And she was quite depressed about that. And then, so I come out in the mornings and I started helping her. We started working with the horse. And the next time it started, it was third. And then the start after that, it won for like 10,000 or something, and then it won for 12, and then it won for 16. And then funny thing, it was a standard bred client, also not a client, but a standard bred owner at the time that I wasn't familiar with, but he also was in, you know, he was in the thoroughbred business in some capacity. I'm not sure what it was at the time. But this horse was winning, and he said, "Well, what's this girl doing? How's she getting this horse? There's such a big improvement." And one of the jockey agents said, "Oh, that's not, she's not training horses. It's a standard bred guy." He said, "Well, what standard bred guy is that?" He said, "Well, Norm McKnight." He said, "Well, what's he doing over here?" So he said, "Well, you have to introduce me." So he said, "I want to meet him." So he introduced me for lunch, and at the time he asked me, at the end of the conversation through the lunch, he asked me, "Would you be interested in training a thoroughbred for me?" And I said, "Well," and the fellow's name was Lou Donato. And I said, "Well, Lou, personally, I have no clue what I would be doing over here." I said, "You know, a horse is a horse. That I can handle, but I said, everything else is foreign to me. I don't know turf from dirt. 6 furlongs from 7 furlongs or a mile and a half. You know what I mean? I don't know which horses to run and which races. And I couldn't really do much good for you. I don't think, but I said, I have an idea." So I said, let me get back to you. So I spoke to Rita, and her name was Rita Schnitzler, that I'd met through my other client. And I said, would you be interested in starting a business together? Like I said, you could be the trainer of record, and I could just help with the horses. Like, you know, I had my 2 cents worth sort of thing, and see if we can, make a start in the thoroughbred business. And at first she was a little reluctant. She said, oh, I don't know. I got a job, and I don't really. I said, well, at the end of the day, you know, you have your own horse, and you have a groom's job. At the end of the day, you can always get a job grooming, you know what I mean, if it doesn't work out, you know. So I talked her into it, and so I hooked, I got back to Mr. Donato, and I said, okay, look, Rita will be the trainer. I'm going to help her. We're going to start a partnership, and we'll see how it goes. And so that's how I got involved in the thoroughbred game.
Well, that's a great story. And how did it build from there?
Well, funny thing, Mr. Donato was in the food business in some capacity. He had a meeting. We claimed our first horse for $8,000, a horse called Hail Little Star. And he had a meeting with another person that was in the food industry. That evening, they conducted their business. They concluded it. And, they started talking about the horse that he had claimed that afternoon. And the other guy said, well, geez, I've always wanted to get in the thoroughbred business, but I didn't know how to go about it. So we said, well, it's fine. You know, buy half my horse and you're in, and we'll go from there. So his name was Gino Molinaro, so he came in on that horse. And then between Lou was kind of managing the stable, and Gino just started claiming horses left, right, and center. And so Rhea and I grew from, the one horse in June to, I think, when we stopped the first season that year, the 92 or 93. We went from one horse in June to 14 horses by the end of the meet in December.
Wow. Norm McKnight, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. An unbelievable story about getting into the thoroughbred business. Norm, you mentioned that you didn't really know the difference between, 6 furlongs, 7 furlongs, 1.5 miles. All that language was foreign to you coming from the standardbred side. How long did it take you to get the hang of that?
Well, not really too long. Once I just became familiar with the breed a little bit and the pedigrees, it didn't take me long to kind of catch on to what made horses do what, I guess. Sprinters are bred to sprint, and routers are bred to go route races, although it's not, that's not written in stone. I've also discovered you can take horses that, should be a two-turn horse, and he's strictly a sprinter. So, I mean, a lot of it was pedigree, whether they race on the dirt or synthetic or turf or,
Do you claim horses that way now, looking at their pedigrees and trying to decide what fits them the best?
No. To be honest with you, the way I claim horses, the way I look at horses, I'm a big Ragus and Chute guy. When I first got involved over here, this Lou Donato, he was a big Ragus and Chute guy. He got me involved. He kind of taught me what they were all about, taught me how to read them, different angles to look for. So I claim a lot of horses off the Ragus and Chute number. So I try and find horses that are running, let's say maybe for $20,000 or $10,000 that I think they're running good rag numbers, and I know that those numbers could win an A other than. So I know there's going to be some upside in the horse as long as he's, in good physical condition. But then again, when I look to claim horses, I also look for horses that I think we can improve on, horses that maybe don't look, horses that maybe are a little underweight, or horses that have bad coats or maybe just not in the greatest of health. And you think, well, if we can get them on a program and get them in a routine and get them eating better, or if the horse can gain 200 pounds and, we can get his coat better, because there's got to be something physically just not right with the horse. And if we can, fix those things based with the numbers that he's running, we should have a 2 or 3 point upward move. and that should win you an AO then. And, you know, that's worked well for us in the last couple of years.
One of the things that stood out to me as I was getting ready for the show, Norm, was looking back on the early days when you first got involved with Thoroughbreds and you just spelled out that story. It was only 3 or 4 years that you had been involved on that side of things, and all of a sudden here comes a horse by the name of Dawson's Legacy, who was the Sovereign Award winner as a champion 2-year-old up in Canada, ran in the Breeders' Cup for you. Tell me the story of Dawson's Legacy.
Well, there again, at the time, Dick Reed and I were still in business together at the time. Excuse me. I was stabled in Barn, I think it was 10 at Woodbine, and Gord Huntley was at the other end, the opposite end of my barn, the late Gord Huntley. And, he bought a lot of young horses, and he always just looked to either run them early and sell them or just buy them and sell them. So he had purchased this horse, I believe, in Kentucky. I'm not sure, but I think he purchased him for about $8,000, Dawson's Legacy. And he brought him back to Woodbine, and he kind of caught my eye. And I asked him if he'd be interested in selling him. And he said, yep. He said he'd be available. I said, what was the price? He asked $32,000 for him. I went to a client. His name was Joe Stritzel. Ran it by him, convinced him into buying the horse. And then we just went on from there with the horse. But we bought him from Gordy for $32,000. Gordy had originally bought him as a baby off somebody from Kentucky for $8,000. We paid $32,000 for him, but I think he earned around $500,000 plus, I think. I'm not sure. He was second in through in the Breeders' Cup, I think. Unfortunately, it was the year that Favorite Trick went undefeated. Was unfortunate we had to run into him, but... it was just a fantastic experience. I'd love to do it again, but I just haven't found one as good as him since.
Well, you need to go back to Gordy.
Yeah, I'd love to do that, but that's a long way to heaven.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. 78-1 were the odds on Dawson's Legacy that day when he was second to Favorite Trick in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Take me through that race and what you remember about that day, Norm.
Well, it was an excellent field of horses. Favorite Trick was in there. Grand Slam was in there. I think Lucas had a horse called Time Living in there. We had brought our, I was really fond of Todd Cable at the time. I think he was a fantastic rider. I thought he was the best rider we had at Woodbine. We hired him to come down and ride him in the Breeders' Cup. And, obviously the odds were large, but I really thought we had somewhat of a shot off of the rags and sheep numbers again. He'd only run a couple points slower than a couple of the better colts in the field, like Grand Slam and Favorite Trick. And, I was kind of optimistic about, at least doing well, getting some money. I never expected to win, but, you never like to think that you can't either. So, we went into the race with a positive attitude. I can remember Todd breaking the horse out. It was kind of a rush to the first turn. I think that's the race that Grand Slam got injured in. There was a horse behind him, I think, stepped on him and severed one of his tendons in his back leg. So then Dawson's Legacy and Time Limit, I believe it was, they hooked up in a speed duel. I mean, the fractions were like crazy. And I said, wow. So going around the middle of the top turn, I said, this horse is going to fold up, like a cheap suit. But I kind of got to my feet at the head of the lane. He put Time Limit away and kind of opened up. And I said, wow. This can't be happening. You know what I mean? In mid stretch, he looked like he had an opportunity to win, and then Favorite Trick come and got us at the wire. But in one kind of comfortable, I think he beat us by 4 or 5 lengths. But the horse just ran an outstanding race. He was mixed up in the heat of the battle the whole way and fought hard.
How about to be sitting there when it's announced that he is going to be the Sovereign, a champion 2-year-old?
Well, that was kind of another surprise. I knew he deserved a lot of credit for what he had accomplished, but I never expected that he would win the Sovereign that year. I guess being second in the Breeders swayed a lot of voters. Yeah.
I can imagine it would. He'd go on to win some big stakes for you later on in his career, too. I know in 1999, he won a couple of grade threes, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting thing what happened to him after the Breeders. We put him away and brought him back the following year. And I raced him at Gulfstream as a three-year-old, and he won on the grass. But it was a soft turf, and he injured himself, and he was never right after that. And we went through a whole series of tests at different universities and trying to figure out what was wrong with the horse. But, you know, the owner was kind of a headstrong guy, you know, listen to everybody else, and you know, we have to take them to this university, we have to take them to that university, we have to take them here, we have to take them there, you know. And everybody had a different diagnosis, and at the end of the day, the horse was still no good. So we wound up coming home from Florida after probably three or four bad races with the horse there, and you know, the client spoke to someone else and he said, you got to take this horse to Guelph and have such and such a person look at it. Some doctor there's going to look at it, and they're going to give they're going to look at it and let you know what's wrong with the horse. I said, all right. So I did that, and I forget who it was that looked at the horse, but when we left there, they said, well, the horse had such some kind of a rare disease. They said, for the type of disease it was, you don't have to put the animal down. If he's insured, the insurance company will pay for this particular disease without putting the horse down, but under no circumstances should anybody ever ride him again. So I brought him home. I called the client. I said, is the horse insured? He said, no. So I told him what the vet had said. And he said, well, then I guess just bring him home. I said, well, Joe, do me a favor. I said, we've gone this far with the horse. I said, I've listened to you. I've let you do everything you need to do. I've taken him to every university here, two or three in Florida, here in Guelph. Several different vets have looked at him. Nobody's been able to figure him out. I said, just let me do what I want to do with the horse. I said, if in a month's time he's not back to the races, I said, you don't have to pay me for training. I'll just bring him home. And if I get him back to the track, then you pay me for my month's work. And he said, okay, that sounds like a deal. So I took him to Dr. Hoffman, which was a chiropractor. So when the horse had run in the soft grass at Gulfstream, he put his sacroiliac at a joint, and he just couldn't function behind. He couldn't move. So we treated him chiropractically for about three or four treatments over the process of a month. And, you know, when he came back, he wound up winning shortly after that. He'd win a couple of stakes. He'd win the Sky Classic stake, set the track record, beat a former Breeders' Cup horse, Bucks Boy, that day. You know, he went on and, you know, had a very successful career after that. So, you know, he was always been a dear horse to me. You know, in my heart, he's not watching.
That's a amazing story and a real feather in your cap that, you know, you came up with the right course of action, and all these vets and universities couldn't figure it out. But that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was just the way it worked out. I mean, I always had that thought in the back of my head, but you know, you just do as you're told. A lot of times, they said, well, to have this vet look, I don't have that vet look at him, take him here, take him there. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's all it was. We got that treated. Tom Hoffman, I dealt with him, Dr. Hoffman, I dealt with him in the standard bred business. So I knew of him and I knew the job that he could do. So that was my choice to do. I just took him there and it worked out for us.
Norm, it sounds like you're kind of along the same lines of many trainers where you become attached to many of the horses, if not all the horses that you train, and you're always looking out for the well-being of the horse. So when Dawson's Legacy finally did get back to the races and finally did win, how emotional was that moment?
Well, you know, a funny story. I think Mickey Walls rode the horse for us the first time back. And, you know, of course, he knew a little bit of the history and what we've been through with him. And I think the horse didn't fire his first start. I think he was fourth or fifth or sixth, something like that. But I can remember, my son had just started working for me at the time. And you know, he went down to the unsaddling area and unsaddled him. and come back and he said, Dad, he said, you know, Mickey said, tell your dad, you know, do himself a favor and just retire the horse. So I said, really? So I said, okay, thanks. You know what I mean? And, and we kept working with the horse, a couple more chiropractic treatments and a little magnetic therapy and one thing or another. And then I think it was his next start, we ran him in the Sky Classic and he went, and then he went another stake. He went two stakes back to back, I believe.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. Great story with Dawson's Legacy. And we are visiting with trainer Norm McKnight here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington studio, and happy to have you with us on this program here today. So in terms of special horses, Norm, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, but what goes through your mind when I mention the name You're Too Much?
You're Too Much. Nice little horse. You know, horse that I had for some clients. But, you know, he was, you know, ability-wise, he was just a very average horse. But, you know, we won some races with him, had some fun. He was at Gulfstream, won a couple races there for us, you know, when we used to go to Gulfstream race a little bit in the wintertime. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the reason I bring up that name is because as I was preparing for the show, I read, Norm, that that was your first winner when you went out on your own at Gulfstream Park.
Well, you know what, Mike, you very well may be right. You know, the first year, that you know, you're probably right.
I know more about your career than you do.
Well, I go through so many horses, and, you know, with me, it's just one day runs into the next, one horse comes, another one, you know, one horse leaves, another horse comes in the barn, and you just carry on. But, you know, I've never looked at that kind of, so, you know, what was, if you ask me, my first standardbred horse that I drove and I won with when I was 16 years old, I couldn't tell you the name of, you know. So, you know, every moment's special for me. I don't really, you know, every win, I mean, every time I win, it's like, you know, it's my first, you know what I mean? So I never have any real outstanding moments that I have. I just think they're all special. So, you know, Dawson's Legacy was great for us. I mean, it was a great experience, took us to the Breeders' Cup. I'd love to do that again. Hopefully we'll come buy a horse. We keep trying. We continue to buy the odd baby here and there, and hopefully one will pan out for us.
So there's no...
Maybe you'll see us down there at the Kentucky Derby.
Well, that'd be cool.
That certainly would.
There's no particular horse that's been like your favorite.
Well, you know... Again, I go through so many. I don't know. I've had some that I guess kind of I'm a little more attached with than others. I had a horse by the name of Bright Adam that was a great horse for us, but he was just a cool dude. You know, Dawson's Legacy was one.
Was that your biggest training feat, do you think?
With Dawson?
Yeah.
I would have to say so. Although we had a lot of overachievers, I think we've had a lot of overachievers. We've had just a lot of average bred, mediocre bred horses, and they've overachieved. What I mean by that is, they've won races or they've won stakes where I didn't think they should win, you know, that they kind of surprised me. Hey, well, that was an accomplishment. I didn't think that horse could do that. You know what I mean? Those kind of things. But so we've had a lot of overachievers, I think. You know, another horse that comes to mind, I bought him at Keeneland for $3,000. And another little bit of a story. Bought him for $3,000. I wound up going to the Dominican one year, and I met a gentleman on the plane, and we kind of hit it off, and we had a nice visit. Him and his wife, and my wife and myself, we hooked up and kind of spent some time together. And, you know, on the way home, I said, you know, geez, I really kind of enjoyed those people, the couple, and this and that. So a couple years later, my wife had surprised me with a trip back to the Dominican and Punta Cana, and she had invited these people back, and I didn't know they were coming. So, you know, we spent some time together, and, you know, we got off a couple of nights and kind of got ourselves in a little bit of trouble, and the girls would come and we'd say, well, I'd just look at them and say, well, that's how we roll. You know what I mean? And so that's why I named the horse It's How We Roll when we came home. And so when we started racing, the 2-year-old, his name was It's How We Roll. And we purchased him for $3,000 in Kentucky, and I think he earned $180,000 or $200,000 for us. And we wound up losing him through the claiming box for $32,000 a couple of years later. But it was a great, great little horse. Always exciting to watch run, and had a lot of fun with him.
Well, that's what this sport is all about, Norm. And believe it or not, we've come almost to the end of this hour program here today. I want to end by asking you, like I do all trainers, to tell us something about yourself that people may not know. What other interests do you have, other hobbies, maybe outside of horse racing?
Well, you know, it's funny that you should ask me that, because the unfortunate part is this is my life. I work 24/7, 7 days a week, and unfortunately, I work to live. I've been in the horse business all my life, standardbreds, thoroughbreds. I spend all my time with the animals. I don't get out to ball games, and you know, at this point in time in my life, I like spending time. When I do get some opportunity in the off season, when I'm down in January and February, when I'm not racing, I try and spend as much time with my two sons and my grandchildren and my wife as much as I can, because I don't see much of them through the season. You know, when we're racing, it's very stressful on family life. So I just try and take advantage of that when I have the time, you know.
Yeah, that's a relatively standard answer, but it's a good one. I mean, a lot of trainers, that's all they do. They're single-minded, and it's a good thing, because if you're not that way, it's a tough business to navigate.
Well, you know, and I think that's the unfortunate part with, it's so stressful on family. Like, it's stressful. Like, my wife's not from the horse business, and it's very stressful on her. You know, she can't understand why I work 7 days a week, and, you know, I work all day long, and, you know, what is this? Like, I live by myself. Why are we married, you know? So that's what you deal with. It's unfortunate, but when you, this is all I've done. I've always been involved in the horse industry in some capacity, and, I'm just kind of married to the business, unfortunately. I think that's... My wife's probably jealous about that. She says, "You're married to your horses."
Yeah. Well, that's not such a bad thing either. Norm McKnight, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. You can catch him racing at Woodbine, and then take a look at him as he makes his way toward that first Kentucky Derby appearance, as you heard him reference earlier. We'll see if he can get there. Norm, really do appreciate all the time, my friend, and all the best moving forward. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it was great to speak with you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
All right, Norm McKnight here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. I love those shows. The non-household name shows. We'll call them that. Norm McKnight is now a household name. What a great guy.
Yeah, fantastic. Great stories. Obviously a tremendous horseman, and we'll keep an eye on him in the future.
All right, don't forget to check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.